destination of this coach is Hazard, Kentucky. We'll do there at 5:15. For your convenience, there's a restroom located in the rear of the coach.
You gonna get sick? Huh? Oh my God, he's coming at you!
Alright, when it comes to 2-year-old Olivia James, you are not the father.
You've irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com. It's JG's Radio Free Insanity with your host, James Gutman. Yo, Gutman, what's the ish?
What's up, kids? As you just heard, my name is James Gutman. You are tuned in to WorldWrestlingInsanity.com's JG's Radio Free Insanity. Today it's Friday. It is the 9th day of the 12th month of 2005. Really fancy way of saying December 9th, 2005. I want to thank you guys for listening. We have a packed show today. Joining us for our special interview in segment 2 will be the artist formerly known as Spike Dudley. That's right, we are going to have... What the hell was that? No. Let's try it again. We are going to have... God, what is that? We're going to have Matt Heisen, formerly known as... Spike Dudley. How did that work? I don't know. Ever since the Kurt Angle thing, I guess they figured out how to do it to everything. Joining us for segment 2 to talk a little bit about his time in WWE, being released, his time on the independent scene, some ECW memories, his feelings about the ECW pay-per-view. He's got tons of things on his mind. He's going to get it all out. So be sure to check back in segment 2 and listen for that. Also, chances are you might be listening to this segment right now on our new Flash Player, which is essentially streaming audio that you don't have to download to your hard drive. A lot of people with slower connections, this is the way to listen to it. And I want to thank Tim Binal, who really helped us out here and has been hooking us up with the Flash Player. Tim has been a great help to me, and I appreciate it. So thank you, Tim, for all you're doing. Really mad cool, man, mad cool. So, yeah, one more feature just to add to WorldWrestlingInsanity.com to make things a little bit easier for you guys as you check us out. I give you guys some updates, too. I gave it earlier in the week on the website. Tom Pritchard is currently without an internet connection. He is going to be back real soon. Chances are we might have him on an audio. Maybe we'll have an extra audio, something like that. But Tom will be back on the site. He's still a part of WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, and he sends his warmest regards to all of you. So I just want to get that out of the way as well. A couple of things we could talk about this week. Let's talk a little bit about Monday Night Raw and the flogging, the public flogging of Eric Bischoff, essentially, the figurative public flogging of Eric Bischoff. And for those of you guys who checked out my Insanity report on PW Insider, I wrote an article about Eric Bischoff in WWE and kind of comparing him to Martha Stewart. Now, before you guys jump all over this, hear me out. I said in the article, I never really liked Martha Stewart. My wife loves her. I never liked her. I always thought that she was fake. I always thought that she was kind of a bitch from what I heard about her. You know, you saw the special. We watched that Sybil Shepherd special where she goes, "Did I not ask for Merlot?" I love that. It makes me laugh. So, yeah, I never really was a huge fan of Martha. For that reason, I always thought she was kind of freaking nuts. So, once she went to prison for so long, when she came out, you really couldn't resent her anymore. I mean, she'd been to hell and back. She went to jail for a while. And Eric Bischoff kind of, I feel it's the same kind of situation. Eric Bischoff was a bastard for years, man. The stories about Eric Bischoff coming out of WCW were like hell on earth. People, you know, he threw coffee at me, and he, you know, he called me this, and he ignored me, and everybody had a story about Eric Bischoff once they were gone. They all freaking hated Eric Bischoff. He sucked. They all went to work for him, but they all hated him. But that's understandable. A lot of us have had bad bosses before. We know the drill. All right? Eric Bischoff, after the demise of WCW, went to McMahon land. one of the worst choices he could have made as far as how he would be treated. The McMahons did not like Eric Bischoff, and it's no secret. Shane McMahon likes to go out there every week on TV and go, you know, I never liked Eric Bischoff. It's like, well, good. Who gives a shit? Of course you didn't like Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff didn't like you, pal. But Eric Bischoff went to work for them, so obviously Shane can go out there every week and say that, and Eric has to just sit there and eat shit. Just like Eric has to eat shit whenever they go on those documentaries. And they portray Eric Bischoff as the most evil person on the planet. And Eric now has to sit there and be a part of these documentaries and go, yeah, well, looking back on the days of, you know, WCW, maybe this was a mistake. You know, stupid stuff like that. And for those of you guys who saw the Monday Night War DVD, Eric Bischoff was a big part of that. And there's a lot of parts of that DVD where they make him look like crap. And he has to go along with it. But if you watch it and you notice, whenever he talks about the times that he really hammered WWE by doing mean things to them and by giving away results, he has a smile on his face. He almost seems proud of it. And as much as WWE doesn't want you to think that he's proud of it, he is proud of it. And you know why he's proud of it? Because Eric Bischoff had ambition. Eric Bischoff had a mind for this business to the point where he was able to take newcomers to from WWE to WCW and make them something new. And people jumped all over this, and it was the biggest lie that you could have gotten out of the WWE propaganda machine. All they kept saying was that WCW, Eric Bischoff, and Ted Turner did nothing but buy talent and use them, stars that WWE made. And that is like one quarter correct, and I'll tell you why. Eric Bischoff brought in Scott Hall. He brought in Kevin Nash, and he brought in Hulk Hogan. Okay? When he brought those three men in, who essentially were the three guys who helped rebuild WCW, yeah, they came from WWE. They were WWE characters. However, Scott Hall did not come in as Razor Ramon. He didn't have the purple trunks on. He didn't come out to whatever came out at the beginning of his music. He didn't have, you know, his whole, he said Chico, but he wasn't Razor Ramon. He wasn't the Cuban coke dealer or whatever Vince McMahon tried to portray him as. Kevin Nash was Kevin Nash. Mad cool Kevin Nash. And you cannot compare Diesel of WWE to Kevin Nash of WCW. They were two completely different characters, at least in my opinion. Kevin Nash in WCW, whether good or bad for the company, was a cool heel. He would come out, you know, hey, me and Scott, you know, all that stuff that he used to do. When he was in WWE, he wore a black glove and he would go, ha, ha. It was the stupidest thing on the planet. So those weren't the same characters. But the biggest one that drives me nuts when people say that WCW just bought talent was Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan came into WCW as Hulk Hogan with his yellow and red bullshit. That was Hulk Hogan when he first came in. And it flopped. It flopped because people were sick of Hogan. People were tired of it. Hogan, he fought Flair, and him and Savage fought, the Army, and that huge, like, you know, the Final Solution and the Yeti going up the stages of the thing. It was like a video game. And that was all stupid. That didn't work. When Hogan did work in WCW, was when Eric Bischoff, Terry Taylor takes credit for it, I guess, and the rest of WCW turned him in to Hollywood Hogan and made him a heel. Vince McMahon did not create Hollywood Hogan. Vince McMahon created Hulk Hogan. Vince McMahon created puppy dog, take your vitamins and eat your prayers and do all the other crap that you do with yourself. Hulk Hogan talking to the children. Eric Bischoff in WCW took this character and they made him somebody new. And this is the issue that I have with TNA, because I think that TNA takes a lot of these characters that come in and they don't really give them new gimmicks. Jeff Hardy, Rhino, I mean, they've all been staying Jeff Hardy and Rhino and people like that. They haven't really given them a makeover. WCW used to make these people over. Granted, there were some guys that stayed exactly the same, but they did go out of their way to change a lot of the characters, and that's what Eric Bischoff did when he was in charge of WCW. He made new characters, and it made WCW work. Eric Bischoff failed when he became stagnant, and he didn't allow those new characters to evolve. He settled into what they were and let them stay there, and that's never good. You always have to evolve characters, and if you watch WWE today, you know why. So Bischoff didn't evolve them, but Eric Bischoff had a mind for the business. Eric Bischoff didn't just take Vince McMahon's talent and use them as a talent that they were in WWE. He made them new. And that's a mind that you don't really find too often in this industry. And right now, that mind is under contract to Vince McMahon. And as I said in my Insanity report, when the day finally comes that Eric Bischoff is released from WWE, not only does he probably still have that ambition and that drive to take down Vince McMahon, but now you can couple that with the resentment and anger that this guy has got to be feeling. If Eric Bischoff has no resentment or anger towards WWE that Eric Bischoff's a nutcase. And I can tell you guys firsthand from speaking to people that have been around him backstage, people who have been around him at some of these various events, and see how he handles himself and sees the kind of attitude that he has. He's not a happy camper, you know? So, I mean, when the day finally comes that Vince McMahon releases him, if Eric Bischoff does not immediately go to a wrestling promotion and try to put Vince McMahon out of business, I will be shocked. And when that day comes, I think McMahon's going to be in a lot of trouble, because not only, as I said before, does Bischoff now have the resentment and the anger, but I think a lot of fans like myself and a lot of people out there who resented Eric Bischoff and didn't like him during the WCW days kind of feel a little bit better towards him now, because he's been humbled. Not only has he been humbled, but he's been bitch-slapped every week by Vince McMahon, his son, his daughter, his uncle, his hairdresser, and the guy who shines his shoes, all for the fun of Vince McMahon. So that's where I stand with it. Eric Bischoff, when the day finally comes that he does leave, Vince McMahon is in trouble. And I think what's funny about it all is one of the readers had pointed this out on the Insanity message boards. I don't want to misquote who it is, but I think it was the Chosen One. That's actually the name. It's Chosen One. One, which is funny. Hang on, let me find it. The Chosen Number One, who actually said a quote that I had put into an article I wrote a few years ago when I first started with the Torch for the Lounge. I was doing Insult to Injury back in the day, and I had written an article called Eric Bischoff Will Be Raw's Patsy. And essentially the article was about the JFK assassination, and I know it's a weird stretch, but about how everything was blamed on Oswald. Oswald said he was a patsy. He wasn't the one who really should be blamed. And I said that eventually, when all went to hell on Monday Night Raw, WWE would blame Eric Bischoff for it, and they did. And that's what happened on Monday. Vince McMahon came out and said, "This show sucks because of you." It's like, well, no, Vince, the show sucks because of you, dude. But no, might as well blame Eric Bischoff. What the hell? Why not? So that's what they did. So now Eric Bischoff, who has been blamed for the demise of WCW, Eric Bischoff, who has been blamed for not pushing Steve Austin and Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero, and has been called a bastard and gray-haired and humped by Mae Young, and Eugene is his nephew, which is some sick joke on their part, too. All these things that WWE has done to Eric Bischoff. Now the final kicker is they're blaming him for the poor quality of Raw, when in reality, we all know who to blame, don't we? We blame Vince, we blame Stephanie, and we blame the son-in-law. And, no. But the McMahons and their family blame Eric Bischoff, because it's easier than looking in the mirror at the end of the day. So, as I said in the Insanity Report, when the day finally comes for Eric Bischoff to leave, we'll be waiting for you, Easy, with open arms. All right, guys, a lot of people expected that to be the moment of insanity this week, the way that Eric Bischoff was treated by World Wrestling Entertainment. But that's not the moment of insanity. Oh, no. This week's moment of insanity is coming up right now.
All right, JR. Time for your colon surgery, and everyone on that, I'm Dr. Heine. I want you to meet Nurse Lockernockers.
It wasn't mud. Beer is only a four-letter word.
The world's largest love machine, Viscera.
Woo! As voted by you, the readers of WorldWrestlingInsanity.com, it's this week's Moment of Insanity.
Hey, what happened?
You think you know me?
That's right, this week's Moment of Insanity, as if there was any guess, was Edge debuting his new talk show, The Cutting Edge, and getting right into Michael P.S. Hayes' face and saying to him, "What are you going to do, Michael? Are you going to get your partner, Terry Gordy, to come out here and take me down? But you can't, Michael, because Terry Gordy's dead." He said that. He said, "Terry Gordy's dead." Now, For those of you guys who don't know who Terry Gordy is, Terry Gordy is not a character who's playing dead. Terry Gordy is dead. Terry Gordy was a wrestler who was a part of the Fabulous Freebirds with Buddy Roberts and Michael P.S. Hayes, and they, you know, they did their thing, and they were known. They were in, if you guys ever watched the Highlander movies, I remember in college one of my fraternity brothers pulled me into the room, and he's like, you gotta see this if you like wrestling. And it was Highlander, which I never really got into, but the Freebirds were in it, Buddy Jack and Terry and Michael Hayes. So, I mean, Terry Gordy was fairly well known. I mean, the guy was part of WWE as recently as 1996, playing the role of the Executioner during the Buried Alive match with Mankind and The Undertaker. So what did WWE do? Well, they had Edge mock his death. And what was stupid about it, too, was that it wasn't even like he was mocking anything specific about it. It was just kind of like, ha-ha, he's dead. I mean, oh, what are we, five years old? So he goes out there and he makes the comment, and Michael Hayes gets all mad and bloated and whatever the hell he is, and gets in Edge's face. Now, the humor of the whole thing is that Michael Hayes actually delivered one of the best promos of the night in the face of all this. But, I mean, the whole thing as a whole was just this mind-blowing situation with Edge mocking Terry Gordy's death, also saying other things during the segment, too, which is what makes it so insane. The fact that had it not been for the Terry Gordy line, there were dozens of other lines that Edge said that we could have picked on. Things like, hey, Michael, why are you out here? Did someone tell you I had some Jack Daniels and an 8-ball? He said that to Michael Hayes on Raw. Less than a month after one of the wrestlers died and they had to institute a drug policy, he asks one of the road agents if he came out for an 8-ball. For those of you who don't know what an 8-ball is, it's cocaine! So he brought up the cocaine line. Also, he brought up steroids when he did the pay-per-view at Survivor Series. I know there was just recently an interview online. I'm not going to look it up right now because I can't really find it, but it was Edge had done an interview. Oh, Live Audio Wrestling it was. And he spoke about how the idea of the Cutting Edge is to say things off the cuff that are just going to shock people. I mean, that's cool, and I have no problem with Edge's character, and I guess if he wants to shock people, that's all right. But the problem with the Terry Gordy line that really bothers me is, I mean, A, it is kind of disgusting, because these guys give their lives to the industry, and now they're dead, and they still have to give their death to the industry. They still have to be a part of stupid storylines and angles. I mean, Michael Hayes agreed to it, so I don't know what to tell you. I mean, the guy's an indentured servant to WWE, too, so whatever happens, happens. The problem that I have with it is that they've already done that stupid, ridiculous line already. They did it a few months ago. Eminem was fighting the crappy Road Warrior wannabes, Heidenreich and Animal, and it was John Hennigan who went out there and he said, oh, is he going to bring out his partner Hawk? Oh, he can't because his partner's dead. And here's the humor, man. I always talk about how my wife doesn't watch wrestling anymore. I used to watch it with me back in the day. Tess and Stephanie, she loved that storyline. She loved the Big Nasty Bastard with the Big Show and Big Boss Man. She liked that kind of stuff, but she hasn't really watched it in a while. In my house, out of the TVs, one TV has TiVo. So most of us, if we're going to watch something, you know, it's going to be on the TiVo TV. And she's usually in the room reading a magazine or whatnot. Both times that there was that line about someone being dead, both the one about Hawk and the one on Monday about Terry Gordy, both times my wife looked up and goes, "What?" Just like that, each time. And it wasn't a good what. It wasn't like a, "Hey, what am I missing?" It was like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" That was the response that she really gave to it. And you can't blame her. I mean, in the real world, you don't usually mock the death of somebody who worked for your company. I can't imagine. I mean, maybe behind closed doors, okay? I mean, we're not sitting here talking about, hey, I was at a restaurant and I heard Edge turn to Michael Hayes and go, "Hey, is your partner here or is he dead?" You know, that was really tasteless. I mean, that would be, people sometimes have shitty senses of humor. That's fine. This went on cable. This went out on national television to everybody watching saying, "Hey, Terry Gordy's dead. Let's all laugh at all the contributions he gave to the industry." I don't know. I found it wrong. I don't think it was right to do that, and a lot of you guys didn't seem to think so either. So, I don't even know, guys. The whole thing was just amazing to me. Up and down, up and down. James Fernandez checked in. He actually voted for the whole erasing the line between reality and storyline. Gets my vote. I mean, he brought up other things on the show about Ric Flair, being arrested, and how that was brought up on Raw, which is weird. But he said it was once again demonstrated in the most retarded of ways. The Jack and 8-Ball insult from Edge to PS, followed by the Terry Gordy comment from Edge to PS. I mean, you can't blame him. I mean, it's really, it's just a shocking, stupid thing that anybody who is really a fan of Terry Gordy has to be upset about it. H2O says, a Terry Gordy comment by Edge. Tasteless and wrong. I'm so sick of WWE using dead wrestlers' memories to get cheap heat. It's sickening. And you know what? You got to agree with him on that, too. I mean, it's the kind of thing where WWE seems to feel that deaths of wrestlers, and I talked about this a few weeks ago with Eddie Guerrero, they seem to think that it was, you know, it's just their thing. And it's free for them to use as fodder. And if they bring out somebody who was involved with the deceased wrestler, it's okay to do it. And it's not. I mean, Terry Gordy, as a performer, is somebody that people came to like and came to enjoy. And you know what? And here's what sucks about it, is that we all know that it's probably going to lead into an angle, or guessing it, that it's going to lead into an angle where Ray Gordy, Terry's son, who currently wrestles in WWE's developmental territory, I mean, even if Ray Gordy's involved in it, it really doesn't change all that much. To me, it's, again, just like Eddie Guerrero, using the death of somebody to really just exploit the feelings of the fans. I always thought this, and I still think this to this day, wrestling fans' grief should not be exploited to sell an angle. You can exploit their anger, you can exploit their happiness, you can exploit their excitement. I mean, you really shouldn't have to exploit anything to be a wrestling promoter. What you should want to do as a wrestling promoter is to tap into their emotions. You should want to exploit ones that are brought in from real life. But WWE does that. I mean, they did it with the terrorist angle. That was to exploit your fears. WWE's done it with, tons of things. The Mark Henry tranny hooker angle, where he got the hum job from the guy. And WWE did that to exploit homophobia. Same thing with Billy and Chuck. I mean, that's whatever. When it comes to grief, I always thought that was off limits. Apparently, they don't either. Also, Personal Jesus says, I'm going to go with the entire Cutting Edge interview segment for this week's Moment of Insanity. Well, I'm glad they're giving Edge something to do, and the idea of a shoot interview segment on Raw is appealing. This was not a good first episode. The opening monologue by Edge and Tammy Faye Dumas was so boring that I temporarily entered a coma. Oh, glad you're back. Upon awakening, I found Michael Hayes and Sergeant Slaughter in the ring completely punking out the Edgester, and when Edge said the 8-ball comment and followed it up with a knock on Terry Gordy, the segment went down faster than Lita in the locker room. Oh, bada boom, ching. I don't know what's more insane, the fact that WWE would actually go there with a Terry Gordy comment, or the fact that a promo by a wrestler who's been retired for over a decade was the highlight of the show. And he's right. PJ brings up an interesting point. Michael Hayes delivered a good promo, but it's just funny that WWE wasted it by having it end on such a tasteless note, especially only a few weeks after they did that Eddie Guerrero tribute, which a lot of us thought was tasteful and classy. And WWE, within the next month, gave us two specific examples that made us say, hey, don't misjudge us. We're still classless bastards. Don't confuse that Raw for class. You know, we still suck. So there you go. WWE mocking death for their own amusement. That's this week's Moment of Insanity. Remember, guys, voting starts now for next week's Moment of Insanity. And Friday's SmackDown, tonight's SmackDown, actually counts for next week. Anything that airs after Friday morning is next week's Moment of Insanity. So see something tonight that really blows your mind, which, if you've read the spoilers, you just might see something that blows your mind. You could vote for it. It does count, and it counts for next week. So there you go, guys. If you get a chance, check out the site. Stop by the message boards. Message board. Vote away on the Moment of Insanity. And while you're there, go to Amazon.com. World Wrestling Insanity, The Decline and Fall of a Family Empire is now available for pre-order, so you can check that out, too. We are now going to go on to part two of our Radio Free Insanity. We'll be joined on the phone line by Dudley. I forgot about that. By the wrestler formerly known as Spike Dudley, Matt Heisen, who will be checking in with an interview segment. So you guys will have a lot of fun with that. So check in part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity. See you there.
Brought to you by World Wrestling Insanity.com.